Blog Talk Radio.
Happy hour, back live after what seems like forever. So glad you could be with us tonight. In case you've forgotten, my name's Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour Show, episode 146. This show is called Radical Reinvention. We have a super guest making her, what I'd like to call her, triumphant return to the HR Happy Hour Show. We'll welcome her in just a minute or two. Just some quick announcements. This show is being recorded live on August 30th, 2012. Our call-in number tonight, if you want to get involved in the program, ask a question, make a comment, just maybe just tell me how much you've missed me through this long summer where I've been off. The call-in number, of course, 646-378-1086. Press 1 after you're connected, and we'll be sure to get you on the show tonight. Also on Twitter, if anybody's out there hanging out on the Twitterverse, tweet us. Use the hashtag HRHappyHour. We'll keep an eye on that as well. So, man, it is good to be back, back on the show. I looked back through the archive. I haven't done a live show in over 2 months, so it's been a long break. I feel like I'm tanned and rested and perhaps slightly less fit than I was at the beginning of the summer, but that's okay. There's been a lot going on this summer. Lots of events. I've seen lots of folks this week, earlier in the week, in Orlando at HR Florida, which was a great time. A couple of weeks before that in Illinois for the Illinois SHRM event, which was awesome, and some other things as well. I had some time off, just, you know, a little R&R for Steve and just recharging the batteries and getting ready for hopefully what's going to be a good run of shows here in the next few weeks. So I'm stoked to be back on, and I appreciate folks for hanging in with me through the long summer break. Let's get right to it. We have what I think is a super show tonight. We have a great guest, making her return to the HR Happy Hour show. Our guest tonight is Kaya Oakes. Kaya is the author of the recent book, Radical Reinvention, An Unlikely Return to the Catholic Church. She is also the author of Slanted and Enchanted, The Evolution of Indie Culture, the poetry collection Telegraph, and the co-founder of Kitchen Sink magazine. She teaches writing at the University of California, Berkeley, and lives in Oakland. And she has a really cool website and blog, which you should check out as well, called oakestown.org. That's www.oakestown.org. Welcome back to the show, Kaya Oakes. Kaya, how are you?
I'm doing good, Steve. It's good to hear you got some time off.
It's been great, and you're a teacher, and so I know you weren't off all summer because you've been out on a book tour, but, I mean, that break in the summer is welcome, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it's so important, and I feel like, I mean, on top of the book tour, I also taught summer school this year, and, man, it makes a big difference. Just shaved a good 6 weeks off of my summer, and
Yeah,
you know, teachers, we get a lot of flack for taking such long summer breaks, but honestly, if you don't do it, you really start to feel it about September, October, like, oh, that summer was not long enough. So.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean, Ryan. So I've been off from the show. Now it's time for me to, like, you know, play the little tiny violin for me. I've been off from the radio show, but I've been working. I've had a little bit of time off, but I've been on the grind, too, a lot of traveling. In fact, Kai, and I didn't tell you this because I realized it all way too late. I just missed your event. You had an event, and maybe you could tell us about it a little bit, but you had an event out in the Bay Area, where you're from, where you had a choir, right, a men's choir singing
along with your
reading.
Yeah, so it was very amusing. My husband's in this choir called The Conspiracy of Beards, and they are 30-man-strong group of guys who sing nothing but Leonard Cohen songs in a cappella four-part harmony.
Which
only
makes
in the Bay Area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It makes sense to go with a book reading about, you know, religion and the things.
Yeah.
It's
pretty spiritual, but it's also very profane. And
nice.
Yeah, they're great. And they just finished making a DVD, and they did a Kickstarter to fund that, and that's going to be out in October, I think. So
yeah,
hopefully
cool.
they'll get lots of.
Yeah, so I bring it up because it looked really cool, and I was in town. I was in Northern California that day, but I flew out that night, like on the red eye or something.
Yeah,
I just couldn't make it all happen, and I sort of figured it all out too late, so that was my bad, and so I felt kind of bummed about it. Let's before we jump into, you know, the conspiracy of beards and Leonard Cohen and the book, let's just reset quickly, you know, maybe sort of give folks, because again, normally this is a sort of a workplace, human resources, world of work kind of show, and I don't care, you know, about any of that stuff tonight. We want to talk to Kaya, talk about the book, and because, you know, I'm a big fan of the book, but let's just maybe reset. The first time you were on the show is at least 2 years ago. It might be closer to three.
I think it was three. Yeah, it was in 2009, I think. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because it was at the tail end. Like, I begged you to do the show, and you were kind of done promoting your previous book, Planted and Enchanted.
Yeah.
And I sort of, like, you know, out of nowhere, just I think I cold emailed you or something and said, oh, I really love the book, please do this thing for me. And you must have thought, you know, this is the dopiest thing I've ever heard, but oh, why not?
It was fun.
I'll talk to this guy for half an hour. So,
yeah.
So you finished up your book. You wrote the book Slanted and Enchanted. You did the publicity for it. And Slanted and Enchanted was about indie culture, indie music, indie, you know, writing, literature, and whatnot. And then sort of tell us about a little bit about radical reinvention, and then perhaps a little bit about the transition or the path that led you from one thing to another, if there even was sort of a direct line between, you know, those two really big pieces of work you did.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds bizarre to say, well, I went from writing this book about indie and the kind of outliers in our culture, you know, and people who do DIY and all that stuff, to writing about the Catholic Church. That sounds like no logical connection whatsoever.
Right.
But the fact is that I was working on a lot of the things that happened in the book were going on as the other book was coming out. So, like, a lot of the events that take place in Radical Reinvention were occurring while I was writing and promoting Slanted and Enchanted. So I was kind of going from looking at people who are outliers in arts and culture to looking at people who are outliers in religion and people who are kind of on the fringes of religion. And so, yeah, so it took about 2.5 years to write this book. And it felt like it went by really fast, you know, when we were just saying 3 years since I was last on your show. It was whoa, you know, that was really fast.
Yeah.
But that was a very quick transition in a lot of ways. So, yeah, they kind of overlapped each other in that way. And so I seem to be on this thread of writing books about people who are on the fringes or the margins of mainstream stuff. And in some ways that relates to business, right? Because you have to think about that kind of stuff. So So I guess that's how the book came about.
Right.
And like with most books, it starts with an idea that I pitch to my agent, and she goes, yes, no, maybe. And with this one, she really liked it. And so from the beginning, she was totally gung-ho.
Yeah. It's interesting, Kai, that you say it took 2.5 years, because the book, you know, I don't know if it's completely chronological. I felt like it was, but it doesn't seem like that long either. Like, it feels like it played out over less time than that. You know, maybe I'm just not reading carefully enough, or maybe that's by design a little bit too. But, you know, so because it was a fairly long process then for you to decide, boy, because to me, the interesting, there's a lot of interesting parts of the book, but like when do you kind of say, I've got to like explore this religion that I grew up with later in life, and there's something missing? Like, does that come quickly, or is that something you've been thinking about for a long time, and then
this
project, you went towards it?
Yeah, that was brewing, like, for years, and I think a lot of people, I'm, you know, I'm happily admit this because I'm growing up, but I'm 41, and like in your 30s, a lot of that's, I think, about figuring out your career, right? And like who you're going to be, how you're going to make a living. And you figure that stuff out, and then you go like, well, what else is there, right? You know, maybe you have a family or whatever. And
yeah.
And then underneath that, there's this kind of question about, like, what's it all about, right? And so so a lot of that was pushing me kind of, like, into this, like, you know, spiritual void, I guess you could call it. A friend of mine just emailed me the other day, and she said, what's a dark night of the soul, you know? And I'm like, I'll be happy to explain that to you, but you should really just read this other book, not mine. But,
okay.
But you know, so that was kind of like what was going on, like, what's going on, what's it all about? And I think that that's kind of where it came from. It's just this big question, you know, like, what else is there in life? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, early on in the book, I think maybe it's even in the introduction, you talk about your maybe the first or one of the first times you sit down with one of the priests who's in the book quite a bit, and you start to
mm-hmm.
chat, and he asks you a question, and the beginning of your answer, or like the question might be just why are you here, or what brought you back
mm-hmm.
here today, or something like that. And
mm-hmm.
the first part of your answer was, well, I was raised Catholic, right? That's what you say, right? And
yeah.
And when I read that, I think, oh my God, that's like the way everybody, well, not everybody, but many of the people I know, probably including me, right, answers that question about, you know, well, are you religious, or what religion are you? You always start with that, I was raised, and then there's always something that comes after it, or it seems like that.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I mean, people in there, I think it's like Generation X to Generation Y, so age, you know, roughly like 50 to 20 or something, where
right,
it's like
right.
the highest number of, you know, lapsed, fill in the blank, lapsed Catholic, lapsed Jewish, lapsed evangelical,
right.
whatever. It's just something about this demographic that didn't want to be part of an organized religion. But then there's this interesting, you know, like I was mentioning, you know, you get into this age and you start going, what else is there?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I did. I went back to what I knew from childhood, but not without first going and exploring a lot of other options, like with, you know, like
yeah.
the religious shopping. It was like Costco, you know.
Yeah,
like I'm gonna
right.
check
right.
out the Quakers and the Sufis
yeah.
and the Buddhists. And I loved all of it, but it wasn't connecting.
Right.
And so I think, again, it's like, it's kind of like figuring out, again, what you're going to do for a living. Like, when you find the work that's meaningful to you, you really connect, and you really start to care about it, and you know, faith is the same way. So,
yeah, let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. Thanks for joining us tonight. Our guest on the show is Kaya Oakes, author of Radical Reinvention and Unlikely Return to the Catholic Church. Kaya, does every book have to have the colon subtitle now? Is that the official, like, book? I've never done that, so you could tell me. It's like everything, right? Every novel.
Both of mine. Yeah. You know,
title, subtitle, right?
That's yeah, awesome. I read this book over the summer that had the most insane subtitle. It was about this guy who goes looking for these rubber ducks that fell off a Chinese shipping boat, and he goes all over the world to figure out where the ducks went.
Nice.
And it's got this subtitle like, a man, some ducks, the ocean, you know, the quest for this and that. I think it's this tendency we have to over-explain everything. So.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, that's funny. Oh, it's another story for another time. But, yeah, so Kaya's with us. Kaya is also on Twitter as well. I mentioned your Twitter handle. It's Kaya, at Kaya Oakes, KayaOakes. So you can check her out on there as well. I'm going to get into your, too. I mentioned your blog at the top, and I am, before the show's over, I am going to tease you about your blog, because I know I've made fun. I've made fun of you about the blog at least once before on an email.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it again one time, because I want people to check out the blog. It's really, really an excellent blog. And then I'm going to make
you.
Fun of you about, like, how you actually, like, run the blog. But
I'm so unprofessional. I am
I know,
on Twitter right now. I saw somebody said, are we going to talk about Zappos? I love shoes.
Yeah.
So did something
Zappos,
happen?
Zappos,
yeah.
I don't know. The Zappos reference, Kaya. So you know who Zappos is, right, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I buy shoes all the time. So.
Yeah, Zappos has gotten this. Now I've said it three times. It's sort of like the HR drinking game when everybody says it now, whether it's at a presentation or writes
oh.
in a what, you have to take a drink, because they've become the, I don't know, just the go-to company everybody selects for, you know, great customer, great company culture, high levels of employees that really
yeah.
into work, they serve the customers, blah, blah, blah. So,
so I've just, heard.
Yeah, it's, but so it's like sort of a tired old example now.
When we were watching the Olympics, what was the phrase? Every time they said something during the Olympics, it was time to take a drink. Like,
yeah.
you know, like, it's amazing. Like, was that guy
yeah.
who was doing the swimming was so excited. And he
right.
kept, you know, but it's incredible. Like,
yeah.
drink, you know.
Yeah. yeah. So that, I've said it now multiple times. So for folks who are checking out the show, and Kaya, typically the audience for the show definitely would have been drinking at the beginning anyway. So it's not really much to encourage them to get a little more involved in what they're doing. So Kaya, you know, I mean, this is a big book. It's a little, you know, it's a long, it's not a long book, but it's a long story kind of, and I want to make sure I do it justice. You know, one of the things that, you know, that I sort of thought, and it's sort of the obvious take in the book, is that, you know, you as this, you know, indie rock writer, lit person, you know, feminist, you know, in your sort of thinking and your maybe, you know, you just progressive sort of mindset, having to reconcile some of that with the really, you know, traditional / conservative elements in the church. Right? So I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church too, so I get it.
Oh,
I get
yeah.
where that's all coming from. And
yeah.
you know, and these fire and brimstone kind of priests all over the place. And I mean, you had to at least initially question yourself, like, what, how can I go back into this after everything I've done, everything I've seen, everything I believe in now as an adult? I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it came down to, like, I got some really good advice from my friend in the book. I call him Father Mello because he's super
right,
chill.
Right.
And he's 89 years old.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's like 90 years old, right? I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's amazing, right? He was in World War II. You know, he's seen it all. He's done it all. And I went to him and I said, look, you know, I'm going to put my cards on the table here. Like, here's what I believe politically, socially. You know, I'm super liberal. I'm from the Bay Area.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to give all that up to be Catholic again. And he said, it's not about that. When you come back into this religion, like, you get to bring your conscience with you, and your everything you did in your past is going to be a gift that you're going to bring to these other people you're going to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I had never thought of it that way, and I had never imagined it that way, because I had also grown up with the kind of, like, a little bit more of a kind of, you know, hell and damnation take on things.
Right, right.
And it really just kind of made me go, oh, yeah, right, like, so I'm a package deal, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like, you know, with my work, too, with my students, it's like everything I've done up until that point when I meet them in the classroom is part of the deal. And it's the same way with the church. Like, they could have, you know, at any point, all the priests I met, all the nuns I met could have said, get out of here, we don't want you, and they
right.
never said that. They never made me feel unwelcome. And so it's been really great in that regard. Now, there are definitely some people out there, you know, in the world, on the internet, who've read this book and are like, she needs to get the F out of the church
right.
because it's not about... They just have a different take on it, and they're entitled to that, but, like, I don't agree. So, yeah, there you go.
I mean, I guess, you know, my sense there would be just naturally, and again, not, you know, encountering any of this myself, but just thinking, like, that must turn a lot of folks, like-minded folks like yourself, away initially, just the thought that there can be no place in this church or other churches, you know, similar,
mm-hmm.
you know, churches for me when I believe strongly in X, Y, and Z, whether it's, you know, women's issues, progressive issues, social justice
yeah.
things. It must the reputation or just that barrier that seems to be there, I'll say it that way, that seems to be there,
mm-hmm.
must be a pretty high one for most people to try to climb over.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a big problem is that there's this big difference between the institutional you know, structure of any religion and then the people on the ground, right? And,
yeah.
I mean, in some ways it's like corporations. at the top, a lot of the time there's a lot of corruption, a lot of really terrible stuff. And then at the bottom are these amazing people who are doing really good things. And
yeah,
so you can't point the finger and say, like, you know, Bank of America is evil because, you know, maybe my cousin works there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right. And my cousin's a pretty good guy. He's a nice
exactly.
guy.
Exactly.
Right. You know, there's
right.
That raises two really interesting points. One, I'll try to make them both quickly. One was in the book, and I'm not sure if you sort of termed this or was one of the priests or the spiritual advisor talked about the capital C church versus the small C church, right? And I think that's sort of describing what you're talking about there. And I thought that was a really important sort of way to frame it, you know, that made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm,
in the other thing I'll mention is you mentioned Bank of America. I just read something today or yesterday maybe that, you know, whatever, I'm not an expert on this at all, but the banking scandals of the last few years, right? We all know what's happened with the financial industry and so on and so forth. Some of the new laws or regulations that have been put into place, the anti-fraud regulations, are resulting in some really low-level workers like tellers and customer service agents and whatnot getting thrown out of their jobs because – You know, they had some parking tickets from, you know, 15 years ago. They never cleaned up and that sort of thing. So I think that's a great point.
I just saw that in the San Francisco Chronicle, actually. Yeah. Wells Fargo, they laid off some guy who had some, you know, criminal record going back to the 60s.
Yeah.
And he hadn't done anything since then. But because the regulations are so tight now that they got rid of him and he had worked there forever, and it's really sad. So the Vatican, you know, the corporate top of the Catholic Church has huge problems and is not in touch with the people. And then down on the ground, like most recently, there's been a lot of media about the nuns and like all the amazing things they've done, and they're doing, you know, I saw one of them on Stephen Colbert, and they're, you know, they're popping up on the news.
Yeah,
and they're the ones who are, like, you know, down on the ground working with people. So I think, again, it's just like you can't mistake. A lot of people do, you know, they can't divorce the kind of nasty hierarchy from the good people who work somewhere. And that's what any church is like, really.
It's an interesting, well, yeah, it's probably a longer story that, you know, why that sort of perpetuates, and maybe, you know, that's a different story to tell, too, more so than sort of your personal story and your sort of, I don't know, return to the church versus, like, you know, how it's turned out this way. And sort of almost went backwards a little bit, right? And, you know, and I'm no historian on these things at all. So, you know, but it seems like there was a time when, you know, it seemed like through different, maybe in the 60s and 70s, things were sort of starting to loosen up, and then it's only in the last maybe 20 years that corporate church, that capital C church, is kind of, I don't know, taking a big step backwards, maybe, is the way to
put it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was brought up in the 70s, as I was growing up in the 70s, and I went to Catholic schools, and they were experimenting all the time, trying these new things.
Yeah.
Bringing in these new ideas, and then it just kind of has recently gotten reversed, and a lot of that's been clamped down as of the current Pope has a lot to do with that, and the you know, the Pope before that. So again, it's the leadership, and kind of like it. But the thing is that the more the leadership kind of clamps down, the more the people on the ground are like either leaving, which is a lot of people have done, and I totally understand that. Or they're going, wait a minute, you know, like, I'm not going to give you any money. I'm not going to tithe and give my money to, you know, the nuns or like a food bank instead. And so I think the reaction has been a lot of, it's almost subversive in some ways. Like, there's so much more activism, I feel, right now of people going, like, wait a minute, I don't like this, I'm going to try and change it. So That's the way I read it. But again, I live in the Bay Area.
Right. Well, I remember some of that experimentation too, and it wasn't all positive to a little kid. Like, I read this part of the book, and you talked about like a confession, right, when you were a kid, and instead of being in the darkened room that we envisioned, the little booth, and you kneel down and slide the little screen up, right, that safety in the darkness there, it's like you're sitting right face to face with the priest, and
right.
I had that same thing happen too, and I'm like, well,
did you?
Yeah, I remember that. And I was like, are you kidding me? This guy,
it's terrifying. I know. And then they also got really into this terrible folk music, like, you know, like those, like, Jesus, you know, with the guitars and then liturgical dancing and, like, all that 70s stuff, you know. It was, like, really, it was kind of like, the hippie thing arrived about 5 years late in the Catholic Church, and they weren't really sure how to do it because they couldn't do the drugs and the sex. So we'll just try this other part of it. Yeah, it was really a silly time. And I mean, there's still, like, the ritualistic side of it is still hugely appealing to a lot of people. And, like, I see somebody on Twitter just mention Latin Mass, and, like, that can be very beautiful. I don't understand anything but it's like it's very medieval and like ancient, and it's like that's kind of, so the fact that it combines these modern things with these ancient things, I think, is kind of cool. So
I think the same way. Even though I haven't really been in the church at all in a long time, I can remember every so often you get out, especially when you're out of the country, like maybe in Paris, or you know, you go to a big cathedral, or in France, wherever large cathedrals tend to be these days, and you think to yourself, wow, this is really cool, this is amazing, you know, the pomp of it all, and the grandeur, and the stained glass, and the artwork, and everything, it's quite compelling, maybe. I don't know if that's a right word to say, but I think it is, and I think that is a part of it, at least for some people, and I mean, I guess that's okay too, right? I mean, I think that's sort of one of the themes, maybe, or one of the messages, I think, from the book too, that there's room for everyone. Is that a way to say it? Like, there's room for people who feel that way, as well as room for folks like yourselves who are a lot more progressive and a lot more, say, non-traditional in terms of their beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a big part of the book is about just this idea of, like, I guess in a way, and I've said this to a couple people and they're like, huh, I don't get it, but all religion is DIY, right? Like, everybody says, oh, cafeteria Catholic, like it's this pejorative thing.
Right,
oh,
I've heard that term, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and like it's bad. And then if you've ever eaten in a cafeteria, you know, like, you're not going to eat the congealing shepherd's pie that's been a little warmer for three days, right? You want, like, the delicious, nutritious stuff. And I think that's what, you know, we pick, everybody picks and chooses from whatever religion you belong to. My friends who are Jewish, they, like, maybe they'll just do Passover and that's it, because you get the dinner with the wine and, like,
right, it's a big party, right.
But they don't, you know, they don't grow their beards long or grow, pay off, you know, the long side curls. Like, it's just, so everybody kind of interprets it, and I think a lot of the message of the book is about that, like, it's okay to kind of pick and choose because you're still going to get something out of it. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, let me just quick reset. Kaya Oakes is our guest. We're talking about her latest book, Radical Reinvention, An Unlikely Return of the Catholic Church. Kaya is making her return. I think it's good when a guest comes back to the show, especially after a long time. Maybe, you know, it's like some sort of validation of the power of the HR Happy Hour show, Kaya. So I appreciate that. Particularly when the show's been dormant for so long. So I appreciate you being our first guest back in after a little summer vacation. So the you know, one of the things too, Kai, in the book, and I wanted to ask you about this, you know, you meet quite a few sort of like-minded people along your way on sort of your journey back to the church, whether it's through sort of the process, you know, from which you have to undergo to get sort of back into the church, and just the different people you meet, whether it's priests or some of the nuns or ex-nuns and the women in your sort of women's prayer group and so on. You meet a lot of sort of like-minded people. So one of the things I wanted to ask you was, did you meet so many of them, or seemingly so many of them, because there really are a lot of them, or did they kind of, I don't know, you kind of sought them out, or they found you? I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Just how many, like, is this just still a few of you kind of on the fringes of the church, or is it more and more and more common than we realize when we think about the church?
I really do think that there's more of us than people realize. Like, I whenever I read up on some really ultra-conservative thing that the Vatican says, the response, like Maureen Dowd, who writes for the New York Times, she's super liberal, and she's Catholic. And Frank Bruni, too, so, like, two of the Times columnists are kind of in that group. And then they also have Ross Douthat, who's super conservative Catholic. And so they get both sides. But the two, you know, the two who are on the more liberal side, I, you know, of course, tend to agree with them. And then also you look at statistics. I was just reading this article about the election, and there really is no such thing as a Catholic vote. You know, when Romney picked Ryan, it wasn't like, oh, the Catholics all of a sudden went, well, I'm going to vote for him now. you know what I mean? Like, the people who were already going to vote for Romney are still going to vote for him regardless of religion. They're not going to be swayed by that so much. The only time that that's ever worked was with Kennedy, and that was before
I
was born.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I think in terms of social justice issues, it's like it tends to end up being more Catholics or Democrats anyway. We've always tended to vote that way. And so, I really do think there's more of us. I was just, like, reading, you know, statistically something like 98% of Catholic women use birth control. You know what I mean? Like, it's an open secret, let's put it that way. You know, we're not coming to church with 14 kids. How do you think that happened?
Right.
And I'm sure that's something people are aware of at the upper levels. And so when getting back to your question, like, how did I find those people? I just kind of, like, kept my eyes open, kept my ears open, you know, and I found them. And then when I went on the road to promote the book this summer, I found more of them. You know what I mean? And I found more of them since the book's come out. I've gotten a lot of really great emails and notes from people. So, yeah, it's been pretty awesome.
That sort of takes me to sort of the next sort of question I wanted to ask, which was the reaction since the book's been out, right? So, you know, the book's been out now a couple of months, maybe 3 months, something like that. And I just wondered, you know, obviously you're only – it's hard to get the full reaction. You're going to get the reaction of people who reach out to contact you or come to a signing or just speak to you at church or after church. But just in general, I'd love for you to comment a little bit about the reaction from some sort of, you know, from the church, from people you might know in and around the church. Any official acts from the Vatican saying, oh, boy, you know, this book is banned?
I haven't been excommunicated yet,
right?
I was joking with some friends on Twitter that, like, I got an email, an article, a chapter from the book came out in a magazine before the book came out, and I got an email from a woman who writes for L'Osservatore Romano, which is the Vatican newspaper, read the article, and she was like, I'm going to be in Berkeley interviewing some professors, and I'm wondering if I could talk to you, and I said, oh, this is it, you know, like, I was like, this is it. But it turns out that they have a women's section in the Vatican newspaper now. I really want to know what it's about. but she's writing for that, so I think I'm not in that much trouble yet. And then also our local bishop just got busted for a DUI, so
Whoa.
He's got bigger things to worry about. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Pretty embarrassing. Yeah, I'm not.
He's not deflecting a little bit by going after you, right? Just to
reverse
the heat or something.
So mad about my book that he went out and got hammered.
We're sort of joking about that, and it is funny in a way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that have gone on, right? Over the years, you know, scandals. Certainly,
yeah.
The scandals involving, you know, priests all over the world and such.
Oh, yeah.
With sexual scandals and whatnot.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know what the word is, baggage or just,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the church has, you know, gone through lots of things in the last, you know, 30,
mm-hmm.
40, 50 years, in addition to many of the things you talk about. And you know, I'd love, you mentioned the women, the article and the women's section of the Vatican newspaper. Maybe we could talk just a little bit about sort of your thoughts around women in the church. That's also, I think, a big part of the book, right? From the historical sort of arc of women in the whole story and the founding of the Catholic Church into today as well. I know that's a big question, and we're just chatting for a few more minutes, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your thoughts around how you approach the topic of women in the church, and then finally up to the fact that women are still not able to be, you know, priests and things like that.
Right.
I'd love for you to comment a little bit about the woman's role in the religion and in the church today.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, we were just, like, in the last few weeks at Mass hearing Acts of the Apostles, and, like, that's, you know, the early days of the Catholic, the very, very early days of the church, and a lot of people don't read it closely enough to realize that in Acts of the Apostles and in the letters of Paul, you know, the epistles, mm-hmm. it mentions explicitly that there were female deacons and that there were women leading house churches. And that has slowly, it's in there, but those passages aren't read at the Mass. And so for those people who don't actually bother to read, you know, between the lines, they're not getting that message. And I took a class with a woman, a theologian, and she's done a lot of studies of that part of the Bible, and she's like, yep, there it is, turn to page, you know, 800 and whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, there's more than one. Oh, look at that, there's a whole bunch of them. And they recently excavated the catacombs under the Vatican and found paintings, very, very old paintings of women giving masses. And so a lot of people are starting to go, so there's historical actual evidence for this, and I think it's a really interesting time because, you know, again, there's all this backlash against the nuns right now, but more and more is turning up, you know, saying, wait a minute, women have been here all along. And so it's really this, it's kind of at a breaking point now for a lot of people, just like what's going to happen, and nobody knows. And yet I think the fact that we're learning every day more and more, we can read history and say, here's what women were up to. That'll hopefully start to sway, you know, the people in authority. It's going to take a while, though, for them to realize that. But the fact that all these, you know, these nuns are being super outspoken and doing really amazing things,
sure.
I think that's a lot of women. I've seen a lot of blogs and responses from women who left the church who are going, oh, you know, I left the church because of the men up above, but now I'm feeling like maybe I should come back and support these nuns.
Right.
So
right,
that's
right.
Really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with Kaya Oakes, author of Radical Reinvention, talking about the book and just her journey back into the Catholic Church after some years away and just some really interesting conversation in and around that. You know, not your normal HR fare, you know. I'll say that again for those of you out there who
we could talk about the Vatican bank accounts.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no,
but,
I don't know.
You know, but it's a good point. I mean, you mentioned, you talked about the Bank of America thing earlier and the Wells Fargo thing, I mean, and it's true, right? I mean, that happens in organizations of any kind, whether they're churches or corporations or other types of institutions, that the sort of people at the very, very top who sort of control everything don't necessarily
mm-hmm.
look like, reflect, or even represent lots and lots of the people who are parts of that organization who make that organization mm-hmm. work. That's a really, I mean, that's just a common outcome, sadly, right? And lots mm-hmm. of institutions, not just the church. And
it's true at my university too. You know, I mean, I work for University of California. We have, you know, a leadership that a lot of people who are the students don't like, you know, because we've had all these tuition hikes and
right.
And I don't think that the guy who's currently the head of the University of California he's a business guy and he doesn't know anything about education, and so it's tough. It's like, you know, we have to learn to communicate better. And it's true in the church too. Like, the lay people need to start communicating with the hierarchy. And we'll figure it out. It's just, again, it takes so long, and you got to be patient. So
And I guess that's right. Something else I wanted to touch on, Kaya, which is kind of, and maybe I'm just reaching a little bit, but I felt like this is a little bit of a theme from Slanted and Enchanted as well. Like, mm-hmm. like if you really believe in something or you care about something, right? The only way to affect real change is to remain involved. Right, you can't leave. You can't walk away.
Right.
And in it, or you, because then you can't have no impact at all. Right. I mean, and I think that's a big part of certainly radical reinvention as well. Right. You must have, or I imagine you came to that conclusion at some point.
I did, and I knew. I kind of felt it from the beginning of, you know, like going to Mass again and like reading theology and. Just kind of going like, you know, if I didn't show up every week, they would never see somebody with, you know, tattoos running
right,
from
right, right.
wrist to shoulder. They would never hear my point of view, because there are very, very, very few people my age in the Catholic Church these days who are not super Orthodox or conservative. And so I feel like I have a chance to kind of, like, talk to people and maybe influence people a little bit. And that's part of why I wanted to write this book. I wanted to tell this story. But I also wanted to say to other, you know, outliers, like, don't give up because you're not the only one. You know, maybe you're gay, maybe you're divorced, maybe you're a single mom. You still belong, you know, and it's okay. And if you just leave, then you'll never know whether it was going to work out or not. So there you go.
Right. No. Fair point.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, you know, Kaya, as you go through a lot of the actual process and the things you do and get back into the church, there's a lot of things that, I don't know, that seem like, there are sort of these universal themes, right? And things, and you go back to, you touch on like some of the early teachings, the biblical teachings, if you will, like things like feeding the poor and helping sick people, and basically, mm-hmm. you know, you stress and you make some really interesting points about how, at least in theory, right, the early church was so much more about helping those who needed help rather
mm-hmm.
than these kind of, I don't know, social edicts, right, that lots of us
mm-hmm.
think about now. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that aspect of not just your story, but sort of as you see the importance in general of the church and the people in the church doing those kinds of things.
Well, it's really community-based, and I think that does relate to the indie thing a lot. You know, coming, being somebody who comes from a community-based arts life, and that I really think that the early church was very much about community. I mean, they were basically living communally. And,
right.
you know, and they were like the first hippies in a lot of ways, you know, sharing everything they had. And
yeah,
it really is like, it's very 60s in some ways. And part of me thinks, well, you know, that doesn't really work in today's society, but actually it does. And mm-hmm. the thing is that, like, for all of our, you know, my complaints about the institutional church, you know, the Catholic Church feeds millions of people. It provides health care for many people. You know, they run schools in poor communities. It still believes in helping the people at the bottom and at the margins of society. And so, you know, that's part of why I was attracted to it, because it is about going back to that message of the Gospels in the early church and, like, you know, help this person because they really need it. And that's part of what you do if you're Catholic. You know, you make a commitment to do that. And, yeah, it's pretty good to do that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Kaya, you know, just a few more minutes left in the show. And, you know, again, our guest is Kaya Oakes, author of Radical Reinvention. I absolutely recommend this book, whether you're religious, not religious, you know, Catholic, other. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting and relevant stuff in there for pretty much anybody. I really do. I mean, I don't know that I'm even qualified to talk about the book, much less read it, but I loved it. I really did. And
Thank you. You're
welcome. But, you know, but it did. I mean, I felt like, you know, again, maybe there's some similarities, too. I you know, we're around the same age, was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of those same things, too. And,
yeah.
You know, like the confession story in particular and, the, you know, getting yelled at by a nun, or types of things. Right? I mean, there's been some tweets about that, too. Guys and people out there have been through that, and that's sort of the – I don't know, because that binds us up maybe and connects us somehow too, right? We've all got that story of the tough nun in our background. But the
yeah.
But I think there's a lot more to it than that too, and that's not really what you know why I wanted to focus on tonight. It was really more about just thinking more openly or more open-mindedly maybe is a way, and I think that's a big. I don't know. I think that's a big positive outcome of maybe you writing this book too. It's just you can kind of see that, yeah, there might be a place for a person like me who believes in X, Y, and Z that may not necessarily align perfectly with what the church believes. And I think that's important as well.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of my friends, I mean the majority of my friends and my husband too are agnostics or atheists, and they've read the book and they really liked it because they felt that it was also just a story about not so much finding your religion but finding your tribe. And I was actually talking about that with my students today. You know, a lot of like figuring out who you are and how you're going to live with your life is about finding your tribe, you know, and
yeah.
And that's, you know, people who share your interests, your values, whatever. And that is something that I think everybody experiences, and it is so important to talk about because I feel like in a lot of social media we don't talk about that stuff, you know, we try to find because a lot of our lives are online now, you know,
yeah,
you find, like, it's all about liking, oh, I like that, you know, and you don't go much deeper than that. And so I think that's, there's this huge void in our culture right now for, like, finding people who you more than just, you know, you like them.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I've sort of thought about that a lot, too. And at times, where I do appreciate sort of the fake intimacy that social media provides. I like that. I like that safe distance.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the lowest commitment we can make now, right?
Yeah.
You click that button and you're gone.
It's
a millisecond and you're out of there. You know?
Totally.
You feel like you've done your part. Oh, I like that. I'm done for the day. But, you know, I think, you know, I've read the book, you know, and read through it, you know, reviewed it a second time. I've been on a lot of planes lately, so I've had some time, you know, to prepare for the show. And I think I decided my favorite parts of the book are the parts where you talk about the reflections that you gave. Like, there's two of them described in the book. I don't know if you did more of them, but there's only two written about in the book, and maybe you could like talk a little bit about that process. And for folks who may not know what the reflection actually is, maybe describe what that is, and then maybe because the second one, the one I highlighted here, is all about that community part, the last little part of it that you put in the book, and I'd love for you to talk about that.
Yeah. So women, you know, they can't be priests, and so, but at some churches, they're open to having us preach. And I'm putting that in quote marks because if you know the Catholic Mass, like the homilies, it's not like getting up and going, amen, and like walking back and forth. And like,
right.
I live in a pretty heavily African-American neighborhood, and we can hear the church up the street, and they're just like getting down on Sunday morning.
Catholic preaching
is more about explaining the readings, relating them to what people are going through, something relating them to what's going on in our culture. And so I was allowed to do that at my church. I was asked, you know, to do it. I had an interview with the pastor. And so I did it a few times, and I described doing it there and particularly talking to the women in my church who are very powerful, amazing. And then I was asked to do it at a church in San Francisco that's in a very heavily LGBT neighborhood, and it's a church that really it has embraced the gay community, loves the gay community, and so I tried to write a reflection that would talk about, you know, what it means to be gay and Catholic. And I'm not gay. I'm not a lesbian.
Right, right.
And so that was hard. And so what I did is I tried to think again about, like, being on the fringes of society and how, you know, a lot of us feel excluded or left out for one reason or another, and what it means to find your community in spite of that. So to find your community on the fringes. And this is where I can get all gospel-y, because that's where Jesus did it,
right?
And so that kind of, yeah, that's definitely what I tried to do in both of those cases. I'm taking a break from it now just because I've been doing so many events for the book, and that's kind of my version
right,
of that
true.
Now. And then also I wanted to wait until after the book came out and just to give it some time in case anybody freaked out and excommunicate me. So
yeah.
Hasn't happened yet. Fingers crossed. So there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I just, to me, you know, like I said, I that part of the book for some reason really stuck with me, particularly the second one. Would it embarrass you if I read just the last little part of one that I like the most? Would that be
no,
all right?
Go ahead.
All right,
no,
I'm going to read it. This is on page one, and I highlighted this so I could find it later. It's on page 197, right? And here it is. This is from quoted from your reflection. And it goes like this. As adults, we seek communities of like-minded people. We find our families of choice. If the adult Christ found his own family of choice among the most despised and marginalized people in his society, to me that means that for many of us, whether we grew up here or arrived seeking a tolerant community, should feel even more of a kinship with him. We love one another more for being outcasts and accompany one another. We are lights to one another. That's my favorite part of the book, so I hope I didn't embarrass you by reading that, but I wanted to do that on the show.
No, it sounds good. I'm going to like that. No, I'm just kidding.
Can you like that? Can we get a like out there?
Yeah, I'm going to put a like on it. Now I was like, yeah, that actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, you like that? It's got to be tough. So I appreciate you letting me do that, because I know it can be
yeah.
for folks to like do stuff like that. So, Kaya, man, we're just a couple minutes left, so I want to make sure we don't wrap up before we talk about what you're up to with the book, with the promotion, the blog. What's next? I mean, is book number three like out
Ooh.
The door yet, or what's happening?
I don't know where it is.
About?
Yeah, it's in my brain.
Okay.
I don't know what it's going to be about. I had this brilliant idea of writing a book about introverts, and then this woman wrote one, and it came out this year, and she did a TED Talk, and it's like a bestseller. So I was like, oh, crap, I can't
I gotta
do that
tell you,
now.
I'm just going to interrupt. I'm done with the introverts. We've heard the
yeah.
introverts never seem to stop talking. And it's the weirdest thing about them, so I think you're right to pass on that idea.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know what happened with that, but we're all of a sudden everybody wants to be an introvert. But I don't know what I'm going to be doing next in terms of a book, but I am going to be in L.A. Next weekend. I'm doing two readings down there at the Last Bookstore on the 8th and at Book Soup on the 10th. And
okay.
if anybody's in L.A. and I try to make the readings fun and silly and enjoyable, and then I'm going to New York in March, and I'll be reading at the College of St. Rose, which is in Albany, and doing some events in Manhattan, and hopefully also in Boston. So yes, I'm still on the road. It feels like it's never gonna end. But I'm super looking forward to it. I haven't been back east in 4 years, so I'm really excited.
So the tour's gone well. Receptions have been pretty good. I mean, how do people are reacting? You know, out in the public. You know, besides the sort of people at church, when you're out and about, people are taking the message and appreciating, you know, the book.
Yeah, people have been awesome for the most part. I mean, it's like I had a great event in Seattle. I had a great event in Portland, read at Powell's, like the greatest bookstore in the world. And people have been super receptive, and it's funny, like, all of my friends, I was terrified to have priests and nuns read this book, and they've been just, like, awesome. This is really good. Thank you for writing this, you know, and I'm like, okay, great. So, and then my atheists have liked it, too, so I guess it's all things to all people.
That's right. There's something, you could almost say, now, there's something in the book for everyone, the atheists,
there really
nuns,
is,
yeah. Yeah, the punk rockers, the indie rockers, right? Everybody.
Yeah, cool. except for Satanists. I don't know.
Yeah, they're hard. They're hard. They're hard.
They're
not
hard
to
demographic.
They're a tough bunch. Maybe you can get the occasional like out of them on Facebook, and and the website is oakstown.org, oakestown.org, and the blog, I meant to make fun of you about the blog. So post Kaya writes, her occasional posts, which are great, and her blog is fantastic, and I encourage folks to check
it
out.
Thank you.
But her blog is written, every post is written by admin user, and comments are always closed. And I sent you an email one time, said, I love how you're still a rebel with the blog. It's like you're showing your disdain for the whole medium by just, you know, I guess I have to do this to help promote my stuff, but I don't even want to do it. So you'll get an occasional post, and there's no comments, and I'm not even going to put my name on it. And then you wrote me back and said, oh, it's just, I got a lot of spam comments, so I just shut it off. So I thought it was just.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, and I should really fix that, but I've been trying to be way more active on Twitter instead of that, because I'm just like, I don't really know, like, if I want people to leave comments on my blog, because you get a lot of crazy spam, and, like, I get a lot of crazy robots on Twitter, too, but at least that way I can just kind of hide them or whatever. So, yeah, there you go.
So cool. So, anyway, check out oakstown.org, Kaya Oaks on Twitter, as well as Radical Reinvention. The book is on Facebook as well, and you could like that page there if you want. So that would be cool. All right, Kaya, thank you so much for doing the show. Best of luck the rest of the tour, the remaining part of the tour, and whatever comes next. Kaya, 3 years from now, if there's another Kaya Oaks book and there still is an HR Happy Hour show, you'll have to come back again for appearance number 3. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much, Kaya. Thanks. Guys, thanks so much for listening in tonight. A couple of quick announcements. You know, I thought I'd have it more together tonight. Like, when's the next show? I don't know when it's going to be. It might be next week. It might not be. I'm still trying to get my travel schedule sorted out in the next few weeks, but you'll be certain to know. I'll post it on the blog and on Facebook, Twitter, and all those other places where I pretend to care about what happens. So thanks so much, everybody, for listening tonight. Appreciate all the tweets, and please do stick around for when the show comes back, whenever it is. And Kaya, thanks so much again. And I think that's it. A couple minutes early, but that's okay. Thanks, everybody, from the HR Happy Hour Show, and we will see you next time. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kaya.
Thank you.